Hey friends, you know that the Code on the Beach conference is coming up here in August 8th through the 10th in sunny Florida. In fact, I keynoted last year, and I tell you, this is a great conference. It's a nonprofit. They're really focused on the community. It's, from a conference perspective, very intense, targeted towards intermediate and advanced topics, but it's in a very family-friendly atmosphere. I took my wife and kids. I went to the conference. Kids went swimming. Then we all went to Disney World. I tell you, if you are interested in expanding your skills in mobile, cloud, data space, I encourage you to seriously check out Code on the Beach at www.codeonthebeach.com. Hansel Minutes listeners can save $50 with the coupon code Hanselman. Code on the Beach.
From HanselMinutes.com, it's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 430. In this episode, Scott talks with Vishwas Lele about Applied Azure.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman. This is another episode of Hansel Minutes, and I'm talking with Vishwas Lele, who is the author of a Pluralsight course called Applied Azure. And in my attempts to continue to learn more about Azure, I wanted to bring some experts on to teach me how this works and how to build real systems in Azure. Thanks for chatting with me today.
Thank you, Scott.
So you put together a course on Pluralsight, and I was excited about it because it's really practical. It's applied Azure. It's not very theoretical, is it?
Right, Scott. So that was my goal. We often talk about the Azure capabilities in terms of storage and, you know, how the storage is redundant and even geo-redundant. And we talk about the service bus, which are all great capabilities, of course. But I thought it would be useful to take these raw or core capabilities of the platform and translate them into applied scenarios. So that was really the focus of this course.
Mm-hmm. And you work on Azure and you build real world systems on Azure. This really isn't theoretical. You're making systems for clients every day, right?
That is correct, Scott. So I've been working with Azure for last 4 or 5 years. And we've done a number of applications, and just counting the applications which are in production, we've done a number of these applications. And in fact, many of the scenarios that I talk about in this course have come about based on a client engagement, a customer project. And then I've tried to generalize those projects, findings from those projects or learnings from those project, and tried to capture them in these modules here as mm-hmm. part of the course.
A lot of times people, when they start out with Azure, they have trouble deciding whether they want to do something in an Azure virtual machine on the one side, an Azure website, which is very convenient on the other side, or somewhere in the middle with Azure worker roles. How can someone make the right decision about what a particular workload or application needs?
That's a great question, Scott. So in this course, what I tried to do was try to highlight the things that you can do. And let me just start with Azure websites. And I have a fancy name for it, and nobody is going to use this name other than me, but I call them ready-made execution units. Now, why do I call them? Because you really don't have to worry about, you know, what hardware it is running on, or, you know, what is the language you are using, or what web server. You basically take your code that responds to some incoming HTTP request and you host it, and everything else in terms of fault tolerance and scalability, all of that is handled for you. That's essentially what Azure Websites does. And Scott, when it first came out, I used to be writing all my applications on the web roles. And when Azure Websites first came out, I thought, yeah, it's great, but maybe I'll host my blog on it. But for all the real things, I'll continue to use the web role. And boy, I was wrong about that, because, you know, over the last 18 months or so, I've used websites for all kinds of things, right? Not just to host websites, but if I have a web API to host, I would host it there. If I want to write a SharePoint app, and there are apps now in SharePoint, you could, Azure Websites provides a convenient way to host it there. But back to your question, I think more and more of these scenarios where you're trying to host a web application or a web API are met by websites. Now, you would want to go to a web role if you wanted admin access and you wanted registry access, something like that is not possible in an Azure website today. Although increasingly, if you ask me this question about a month back, I would say, you know, one other thing that's not possible is the traffic manager. What if I wanted to load balance my Azure websites across multiple data centers? That was not possible, but of course the team has added that. They've added the staging and production deploy capabilities. So Azure website team certainly has been adding more capabilities, but at this point in time, web roles are good for if you want, like I said, the admin access, registry access, and things like that. And the other important use case which still is applicable for a web role is that if you're, let's say, trying to build a HIPAA-compliant application and or a FedRAMP application, these are all compliance standards that Microsoft Azure has achieved in the last several months. And if you look at the HIPAA compliance, Azure Websites is not part of that. So if you're building such an application, you would want to use either a web role or you would want to use a virtual machine and then host your code within the IIS there.
Mm-hmm. So with an Azure virtual machine, or what they call IaaS, right, infrastructure as a service, you're fully responsible for that virtual machine. You have to run Windows Update. You have to manage it. It's, I like to say it's like a puppy. It's your job to keep this thing alive and maintain it. And on that Azure website, it's platform as a service, which means you effectively have nothing to think about as far as the underlying system. Like, there is a virtual machine, but you don't care. You really don't even know what operating system it's running or what version of anything it's running. It just runs your app.
That is correct. And in fact, that is true for both a web role and an Azure website, that you really don't worry about the underlying patching or security fixes and things like that. You focus on writing your code and you deploy that code. In the web role's case, that deployment takes some additional amount of time because they are going out and provisioning a machine based on your specifications. They are assigning you an internal IP address. They're connecting you to a load balancer and things like that. So it takes about a median time of about 5-6 minutes to deploy to web role.
Mm-hmm.
And in case of Azure website, that deployment takes seconds because they have a pre-provisioned capacity that is out there and they simply take your code and deploy it. Now, there are some other differences there, though. Even in Azure website, you can start out in a free tier where you are sort of co-located with others, but you can scale yourself up and get yourself an entire virtual machine if you wanted to. So the lines between Azure website and web roles have blurred over the period because Azure websites have continuously added capabilities. But if you truly wanted to, control the behavior of the application, access registry, run it in admin mode, web role is still the way to go. But for everything else, Azure websites would be my first preference.
Okay, so then a web role has, it is a managed operating system. It might reboot at any time. It might get Windows Update at any time. But I can remote into it. I can do whatever I want to.
That is very true. In a web role, you can remote into it. And one other interesting difference, Scott, is that in order to take advantage of the SLA that Microsoft offers, you have to have two instances of the web role connected to a load balancer. And only then can you be assured of the SLA guarantees. And that's for a very simple reason. Typically, they will place the two instances in two different fault domains or upgrade domains. So the idea is that if they are trying to patch not your OS, but the underlying OS, they would bring one machine down, patch it, and then bring you back up. So your application is never down. In case of Azure websites, very interesting. You really are not running two instances. You're only running one instance and you still get that SLA guarantee because, you know, they have more control. They can detect what's happening and they can, move you to another instance. So there's that subtlety there. And one other interesting difference is web role is, if you have two instances of web role, you are connected through a load balancer, which is essentially a round robin load balancer. So there's no state at all between the two instances of web role. In case of Azure websites, because of the ARR module in there, you do get stickiness. That's one other important difference. between the two, WebRoll and Azure website. But interestingly, Scott, so we have been talking about how Azure websites is certainly, you know, by virtue of adding new capabilities, certainly is being sold as a platform for enterprise applications. So, you know, you can have large websites that want to handle large amounts of traffic. They can certainly use it. One other interesting use case, and I think, Scott, you talked about it in a blog post a while back, and that happened to be one of the scenarios that I worked on. So one of the startups came to us, and they are in the business of, you know, if you're organizing a charity event, they would set up a website for you. And they have arrangements with a number of different payment gateways. So you're organizing a charity event, they will set up a site for you, they can collect money on your behalf, and then, you know, of course, give you the money when the event is done. And then these sites are typically up for a day, a week, or a few hours even. And they want this rapid ability to create these sites and then shut them down. And they were, what they were doing today was, you know, going to a hoster, and they had written a bunch of code, which would, anybody presses a new site, they would come in and then go and provision a new IIS virtual directory, deploy the code, and have it up and running. And we talked to them and said, you know, you can do this in an Azure website. And they said, well, this is going to be expensive, because every time they looked at the Azure pricing numbers and they said, this is going to be expensive. You know, in the hoster's case, I just have one machine or two large machines, until the time then we started showing them the standard version, which you talked about, Scott, which is, you know, essentially got one website and then multi-tenant, hundreds of websites within that, and that proved to be a cost-effective way for them to run it. Mm-hmm. So that was one point I was just trying to make. But if you allow me just a quick, on the other end of the spectrum, Scott, we have talked about Azure website and web roles, and then, you know, you could say that infrastructure as a service virtual machine, well, you have to install IIS and you have to do all those things there. But even the line between a raw virtual machine and a web role is also blurring there. Because if you see what was announced at Build or what was announced just last month at TechEd, this whole notion of agent-based deployment. So when you're provisioning a virtual machine, they will install an agent, and by virtue of that agent, you can add more extensions to it. So you can say, oh, by the way, give me a raw virtual machine, but add an extension that provides me malware protection. And now suddenly it's not, you still have the puppy, but somebody else is taking care of one chore to manage that puppy. And think of more extensions. And now the lines between even the web role and the virtual machine role begin to blur.
Yeah, with my new little startup application called My Echo, it's a dictation application for iPhones. I have to run a back-end service to act as a relay so that my iPhone application can talk to my Windows application. And it was the addition of Traffic Manager, as well as the ability to have, you know, 100% uptime, or at least close to 100% uptime without having to break the bank, that mm-hmm. caused me to pick Azure websites. So I have three standard instances, one in South Asia, one in West Europe, and one in the US. And it gives me near worldwide coverage, a very good experience for everyone all over the world. I can deploy to all three of them. I'm automatically getting performance load balancing, and the whole thing runs on websites. Something I would have picked web roles for maybe a year ago, even.
That's right. That's absolutely right. Yep.
Hi, this is Scott. I really appreciate our sponsors because they make the show possible. Today's show is sponsored by Developer Express. Become a UI superhero with DevExpress, controls, and libraries. Deliver elegant .NET solutions that address customer needs today by leveraging your existing knowledge. You can build next-generation touch-enabled solutions for tomorrow. You can download your free 30-day trial at dx.hanselminutes.com. That's dx.hanselminutes.com. Yeah, I think websites are becoming, they used to be thought of, I think, perhaps as a toy. People thought, oh, you just use websites for a quick little deployment. But I don't know if you know this or not, but did you know that weblogs.asp.net as of, I believe, today, is now running entirely on Azure websites. And that is using Orchard, which is, you know, historically been thought of as being a non-trivially sized application, rather a large application. It's been quite tuned to work on Azure. So they're actually running 750 blogs in just four Azure websites, but they're only on one virtual machine. So this is four Azure website instances running on a single standard large VM.
Yep, that I did not know that, but I'm not surprised. This is great.
And, yeah, I'm glad you're not surprised.
I'm not surprised because, you know, I've been a fan of Azure websites in the number of scenarios, and I mentioned the SharePoint app. You know, if you needed some place to host this piece of customization code that acts as a glue between your SharePoint instance and you have this piece of customization, Azure website seems to be a great place to host it.
Yeah, absolutely. And the perf numbers are pretty ridiculous. They do 17 terabytes bandwidth out and, you know, 1.5 million page views. And it's interesting also because it's using all of the different aspects of Azure. It's got the Azure CDN. It's got the blob storage. There's queue storage for synchronization and also Azure Cache. So that kind of brings us into a discussion of loosely coupled apps. You talk about this in your course, that, you know, an application isn't just a website sitting on a single instance. They need to use different services and have loose coupling between them, like using Service Bus.
That's right. So that was an interesting project that I worked on. It was about the loosely coupled applications. So essentially, you know, I think we can all agree that building applications that are loosely coupled is a good thing. And in this scenario, the example that I talk about in that particular module, Scott, is the insurance example. So oftentimes when you buy an insurance from a company, that company is not themselves underwriting your insurance. What they indeed do is take your quote and send it out to a bunch of underwriters. And these underwriters will then come back with a quote and then they let you select which quote you want. That's a very simply stated problem. So in this case, what you want to do is typically want to add new underwriters to the mix without sort of causing a big upheaval in your system. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the tools that I use here, I'm using Service Bus Topics, which is a fantastic tool for me to take this message and then publish it. And anybody who's subscribing to that topic would get that message. So that allows me to bring additional underwriters as I need them. That's one aspect of it. And then in the same module, I talked about how these underwriters may have a slightly different way of capturing this information. So their schemas may be different. So I also combine in that example the loose coupling offered by a Service Bus topic with something like a document store. Like in this case, I use a MongoDB store, which allows me to persist these messages that are coming back from underwriters, which may look slightly different. So I don't have to necessarily have one unified data model. Like, gives me more flexibility to add more providers. So that was the idea. And the interesting thing about that is, you know, the Azure Service Bus, of course, is available in Azure, but you have an equivalent of that on the Windows side, the Windows Service Bus. And of course, MongoDB, you could install in Azure, or you can install it locally on premises. So in this course, what I've tried to do is I've tried to talk about Azure concepts, but I've also tried to leverage the fact that many of these examples and concepts, you have parity between them, between an on-premises setup and an Azure setup.
Yeah, I think that when people move things into the cloud, it's the realization that there's lots of different kinds of work being done. You know, it's not just traditional web apps where we have one job, and that is to generate and serve a page. You've got back-end work, administrative work, you've got workflows, you've got background processes, and this means that scaling up a site is more than just moving a slider bar from one instance to multiple instances, you know?
That's correct.
So you've got different processes, different administration tools. You've got the Azure Service Bus doing the coordination between them. You've got MongoDB. You might want to scale any and all of those things at a different rate.
That's exactly right. So, you know, once I have sort of decoupled my incoming messages and I've placed that message on the topic, I can then scale that up in that manner. I can add more underwriters because I'm getting too many requests and they're not able to handle them. And then it also allows me that decoupling that, you know, if one of my underwriters is down, I can leave that message and they can come back and retrieve it at a later time. So it offers all of those kinds of things that make the applications, more robust and less brittle.
I know that one of the things that you're really passionate about is the ability to have large amounts of data get acted upon, kind of that big compute where, you know, maybe you've got a website that's collecting data or underwriters are doing work, but someone needs to go and analyze that later with Excel. Azure's maybe doing the chewing of the data. Is that correct? And then Excel does the analysis?
That's right. So, you know, I have two modules, Scott. One of them I call the big compute with HPC services for Excel. And I work with a professional services firm, a multinational professional services firm, which does a lot of these actuarial calculations. And believe it or not, they have these large Excel models. These are 10, 20 meg Excel files, which have lots and lots of calculations in them. And these are your 401k or retirement calculations, if you will. And imagine having to do these calculations for a large number of employees with different permutations and combinations over and over again. So rather than having that code be written in C# or VB.NET, their analysts write most of these models in Excel. Now, if you're trying to execute so many instances of Excel, you'll very quickly run out of capacity on your machine locally or on premises. So one of the capabilities that HPC offers is that you can set up HPC is high performance computing. And what you can set up is you can set up multiple compute nodes. And what HPC services for Excel does is you can have an Excel instance on each of these compute nodes. And then you have a SOA style or service oriented architecture style access into these compute nodes. So what is happening in this instance, in this module that I talk about, Scott, is now once you have populated these compute nodes with the right Excel models, you can come in and make a call into HPC, and HPC will route your request to one of the right compute nodes. So this way you can scale up, you can have any number of these compute nodes. And interestingly, you can also have a scenario where you could be running this setup completely on premises because, you know, your capacity is enough to meet your needs for your normal course of operation. But come twice a year or thrice a year where you are trying to do all the calculations all over again for all your clients, you can just burst out to the cloud for that period of time. So, in fact, that interaction is very interesting. Your compute node could still be in on-premises environment. You can just simply burst out to the cloud, get additional set of compute nodes, do your calculation, and then complete the required processing that you need to get done. So that's one big compute scenario. Of course, the Azure team has done a great job of also giving you a tool to do data analysis. So what I talked about previously was really you were doing a lot of number crunching, and that is accomplished through HPC services for Excel. But what if you're trying to do a lot of data processing? And the HD Insight team within Azure has given you an Apache Hadoop version of that in Azure. So you can go in and say, please give me a Hadoop cluster of 16 nodes, and you can do the data processing. And one thing that's very interesting, and I'll let me just go back and sort of explain this in terms of a proof of concept. And this is not in production, Scott, mm-hmm. but this is a proof of concept that I built for FBI. I think I'm allowed to say that because this is a proof of concept. They have this application where they wanted to stand up these sites very quickly around the country, collect the data, and then process this data. And Azure Websites is a great way to say, go ahead and build these applications and then provision them across various data centers across the US. And as this data is coming in the form of either text, audio, or video clips, this data directly goes into Azure Blob Storage. And one interesting thing about the HD Insight implementation is, it is of course the Hadoop implementation, but rather than the data that you're trying to process coming in from an HDFS system, your data could be in actually the Azure Blob Storage. So for this example, what we have done is we have uploaded the data into the Azure Blob Storage and then provision an HD Insight cluster and then run some interesting queries on top of that data. And then finally, once you've processed this data, you can go into Excel and then using something called Hive, which is a SQL-like language, which really converts ultimately to some MapReduce logic. You can have an ODBC driver, a good old ODBC driver inside Excel that connects to this HD Insight cluster, and then you can do further slicing and dicing of that information. So that's a pretty interesting scenario there as well.
And how transparent is this to the user? The user just feels like they have unlimited computing power, or are they having to tell Azure what to do to make this scale?
So to the user who's setting up the cluster, they need to go in and provision the right HD Insight cluster. And then you need to load the data into the Blob Storage, which is acting as the HDFS or Hadoop file system. But to the end user who's doing this analytics on the data that is already there in the HD Insight cluster, for them, it could be as simple as opening up Excel, opening up an external data connection to this HD Insight cluster, and then, firing off some commands and getting that data back. So from an end user analyst perspective, it is very approachable. They're not worried about, where this data is coming from. But the person who's setting it up, they need to provision the HD Insight cluster appropriately.
And this is kind of funny. Forgive my ignorance, but it almost seems, I think, as I am not an Excel user on a regular basis, of Excel as being kind of a thing of the past. It is what it is. It's basic spreadsheets, but this really moves Excel into a totally different way of thinking. It's almost like Excel as terminal server. It's a view on top of a much, much more powerful back end that is doing a tremendous amount of work.
That is exactly right, Scott. In fact, there's an interesting history behind this that, Microsoft tried to, obviously have a significant BI offering in form of OLAP services and all the offerings that come with SQL Server. And they were trying to get a desktop tool which was really the tool that allows you to consume that BI functionality. And there were a number of acquisitions made over the last decade or so. But, the answer kept coming back as, well, I use Excel for everything else. Why don't you add this BI capability directly into Excel? Because that's what I'm most familiar with. So even if you're not an Excel power user, you know about pivot tables because that's a core capability that has existed for years and years and years. But now imagine that pivot being connected to an external source. So that's really the beauty. It's transitioned into this modern BI tool that you use, and whether you are getting data from an Hadoop cluster or you are getting data from Azure Data Marketplace or you are getting data from some OData endpoint, you can mash that data up, create an in-memory cube, and with some of the recent additions, Scott, like the Power Query and the Power Maps and things like that, you can really build nice looking, not only charts, but animations that bring it all together in terms of being able to visualize this data.
So if companies already have Azure and they're already doing work on Azure and they've already owned Excel and there's nothing additional to be purchased, is there? It's just a matter of doing the analysis and deciding what this should look like for your company.
That is right. So if they have Azure and they are using HD Insight service in Azure, so they have this data, they're processing this data, and they can simply, if they own Excel, they can download a free Hive ODBC driver from the Microsoft site and then start slicing and dicing that data. That's absolutely right.
And you have a whole module on this within your Applied Insights course that anyone with a Pluralsight subscription can start looking at right now.
That is correct. So I talk about, there are three modules in there. One is about the HD Insight, which is the big data module. And we already talked about the big compute Excel module. And then there is also a module that I talk about if you are not trying to do big data or big compute kinds of things. You can also connect up multiple worker roles and then offload processing to a worker role. So you can certainly do that if you're trying to do something which is more custom and not the scale that you want to have an HD Insight cluster. You can also, you know, provision a set of worker roles and connect them using Azure queues or Service Bus queue. And you can, you know, again, implement, if you will, your own custom map reduced algorithm if you wanted to do that. So I have three modules that sort of address the same problem, slightly different tool set for a slightly different problem.
Very cool. Well, thanks so much, Vishwas Lele, for chatting with me today about Applied Azure. And we'll make sure to include a link to this course in the show notes and people can connect with you online.
Well, thank you, Scott. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and we'll see you again next week.